owns your face? You do, right? Well, yes, but in an age of maximum surveillance and facial recognition software, your image is public property, and there are lots of companies eager to profit from it. That effort is at the heart of the new book, Your Face Belongs to Us, A Secretive Startup's Quest to End Privacy as We Know It, by Kashmir Hill. Kashmir is a technology reporter for the New York Times, and she joins us now to share five big ideas from her book.
Hello, I'm Kashmir Hill. I'm a New York Times journalist. I cover technology and privacy. And I'm also the author of Your Face Belongs to Us, A Secretive Startup's Quest to End Privacy as We Know It. I am going to share with you five of the key insights from my book. Insight number one, this was not a technological breakthrough. So when I first heard about Clearview AI, I had just become a reporter at the New York Times, and I got a tip from somebody who discovered marketing material for Clearview in a public records request. And it said essentially that Clearview had scraped billions of photos from the public web, from social media sites, education sites, all over the place, and built a facial recognition app that could identify a person with something like 99% accuracy and bring up all the photos of them online. And my colleagues and I were stunned. Legal experts that I called had never heard of anything like this before. Everybody was frankly astonished by what Clearview AI had done. But working on this book made me realize that the tools to do this had been around for a while and that they were essentially sitting out there in the open online. And that what the small kind of team of misfits at Clearview AI had done was not a technological breakthrough, but rather ethical arbitrage. They were willing to do what others weren't. They were willing to gather these photos and make this radical tool that other companies had deemed taboo. And so they're kind of a classic regulatory entrepreneur in the style of Uber and Airbnb, that they did something that was kind of in a legal gray zone and made it their own. And there have been and will be copycats. Insight number two, Google and Facebook actually protected our privacy here, in a way. Google and Facebook aren't necessarily known as privacy protectors. You know, most people associate them with kind of changing privacy as we know it and creating new ways to discern information about each other, to post information about ourselves. But what I discovered working on the book is that both companies had actually developed Clearview AI-like tools internally, you know, the ability to take a photo of somebody and find out their name or find other photos of them. And both companies held what they developed back. Eric Schmidt, actually a decade ago in 2011, said that this kind of face recognition was the one technology that Google had developed and ultimately deemed, you know, too dangerous to release. And so that was interesting to me that these two technology giants both decided they shouldn't release the technology and then actually bought up all the small startups that were capable of this a decade ago and really kept this superpower from coming out earlier. It's just that now the tools have been open source thanks to this kind of AI neural network technology revolution. And so increasingly it's something that anyone could potentially build, so they can't hold it back anymore. But where they are culpable is, you know, it is Facebook's photos. In many cases, that have been scraped by companies such as Clearview AI. And so one of the things that happens right now is you take a photo of somebody and it'll lead to their Instagram account. So Facebook could have possibly have done more to prevent that kind of scraping. Insight number three, the world of personal information is about to reorganize itself around our biometric information. What that means is, you know, for the last few decades, we have been building these online dossiers, posting a lot of information about ourselves, having other people collect information about us, our clicks, our streams, you know, everything that we've been doing has been kind of getting gathered online. And right now it's kind of associated with, you know, maybe your name, maybe a cookie on your computer, maybe some data broker's file. But what's going to happen is that increasingly this online dossier is going to be directly linked to us via our face. It is going to be trivial to identify somebody as they walk through the world and just immediately say, hey, like this face belongs to Kashmir Hill. And Kashmir Hill has this whole online dossier of who her friends are and where she lives and what her credit rating is and what we think she's willing to spend in a given year. And I think that is going to change what it means to kind of navigate the public world. And I suspect that, you know, artificial intelligence is getting so powerful that we'll also see that happen with other biometric information, such as this unique voice print that I'll be able to be linked to everything I've ever said that's been recorded. Already, we're seeing this happen. You know, this is increasingly we're using our biometric information to unlock services. Charles Schwab lets people access their online financial accounts and verify who they are via voice print. You know, you use your face now in many airports to board a plane. When I was working on this book, I traveled to London and entering a country was so easy because I just put my passport down on the scanner and there's a biometric chip in my scanner and a camera looked at me, verified I was who my passport said I was, and just let me into the country. I didn't have to wait in a customs line for hours. But it also will mean it will be easier to unlock information about us. So we're seeing that with a kind of the most notable example is in New York City, Madison Square Garden has decided to bar lawyers who work at firms that have lawsuits against Madison Square Garden or its parent company, MSG Entertainment. And so anytime one of these thousands of lawyers tries to go to a concert or a show or a sporting event at MSG or Radio City Music Hall or Beacon Theater, which are also venues the company owns, they get stopped at the metal detector and turned away and told they're not welcome until the firm they work for drops the case or the, you know, the litigation is resolved. So that's just wild to think about this world in which our face is linked to who we are. And maybe you write a bad Yelp review about a restaurant, and then the next time you try to go there, they say, hey, you're not welcome here anymore. Insight number four. We really need to rethink what we make publicly available. We have to rethink the public commons of the internet because, I mean, the lesson of the book is what these facial recognition companies have built was only possible because we all put a bunch of photos on the internet. Facial recognition got so good because there were billions of faces to train it on, and it's able to recognize each of us because we have put our photos out there or others have put our photos out there. And because, you know, artificial intelligence is getting so powerful, it is able to crunch just so much data. And increasingly, we're seeing OpenAI and other artificial intelligence companies to create things like ChatGPT, they're just going out there and scraping everything on the internet. And so everything public is kind of being used in new ways. And it's been a problem for artists who are seeing their art get, you know, sucked up. It's a problem for publications like mine. The New York Times has said they don't want OpenAI to be scraping their content anymore. We have to think about, you know, what we are putting out there and how it will be used, because increasingly anything that is public is going to be scraped and it might be used in ways by artificial intelligence that we just couldn't predict. I don't think that many of the people who've been putting their photo on the internet for the last 20 years were thinking, well, one day facial recognition is going to come along and link all these photos together. It's just, it was hard to predict, but now it is real. Insight number five from the book is that laws work. This feels kind of funny, and it's, you know, it's only to an extent, but basically, there's some people who have more rights over their face than other people. People who live in Illinois have better protected faces than the rest of the American population. And that is because Illinois passed a law in 2008, incredibly prescient, called the Biometric Information Privacy Act, or BIPA. And BIPA says that if you want to use people's biometric information, including their face or their voice print or other kind of bodily information about them, you have to get their consent. And so companies that want to use Illinoisans' face prints need to get their consent first or pay $5,000 per violation. And for that reason, companies don't offer certain products there. Google's Nest Cam doesn't offer facial recognition the way it does in other states. And Clearview AI has gotten in a lot of trouble in that state. And so the book kind of details how it is that Illinois came to pass this law so early and the trouble it's caused for technology companies. But it's also the case in Europe that there are privacy laws that prohibit what Clearview AI has done. And it has forced Clearview so far not to do business in Europe. And so, yeah, privacy laws actually matter and they actually work. And so we as a society have a decision to make right now. Basically, how widespread do we want facial recognition to be? You know, do we want to be subject to this? Do we want to have our photos pulled into this? Do we want for everyone with photos on the public internet to be kind of have the experience of famous people where you're just recognized everywhere you go, everything you do, you know, even if you're at a restaurant, you think you're anonymous, you're having this really sensitive conversation with a tool like Clearview AI, somebody next to you could take your photo and know who you are and suddenly understand the context of that private conversation. It will really change what it means to kind of be out in public. So thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoy the book. I loved writing it, and I hope it is as much fun to read as it was to write, even if it is a bit scary.
Thank you, Kashmir. That was Kashmir Hill with five big ideas from Your Face Belongs to Us, a secretive startup's quest to end privacy as we know it. Also, check out our book bite for Our Data Ourselves, a personal guide to digital privacy by Jacqueline Lipton. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.